Welcome to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations, a podcast featuring members of the St. Mark's Cathedral community in Seattle, Washington. These interviews feature lives of faith and adventure, service and connection. Here's our host, Michael Pereira.
Over the many interviews that I've conducted with people at St. Mark's, one name has been repeated a lot, and I think that name is something of a pioneer here in St. Mark's and in the history of this cathedral. And that brings us to Mac Brown today. So Mac, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation.
You're welcome.
I'd like to start turning the clock back and just keeping it really simple. How did you find St. Mark's? When was that? What was that like for you?
I found the cathedral when I came out here to finish college in the 1960s, and I had been a lifelong Episcopalian, a cradle Episcopalian, and I was living in the U District, and there is an Episcopal church in the U District. For some reason, I decided I wanted to go to the cathedral. So I came here from the U District for a while, not terribly long, because the style of worship was not quite what I'd grown up with, and so I would take a bus from about here on St. Mark's property all the way down to St. Clement's of Rome. It's an Episcopal church in Mount Baker, in the Mount Baker neighborhood.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a long hike. Later I got a car and I continued to divide my time before I graduated between St. Mark's and St. Clement's.
What made you return to St. Mark's?
Although the liturgy was not celebrated in a way that I was more familiar with, accustomed to, you might say preferred, it was close to me from the U District. I liked the ability to sort of disappear in the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get that in a small congregation. I liked the music. They were already doing the Compline service. It hadn't been going very long, but I enjoyed coming up for that all the time.
When did you start to feel that this was your spiritual home? Because you were still going back and forth, I think, mentally at least, between St. Clement's and St. Mark's.
Well, chronologically, I finished school here, returned to my home state of Montana, and went to law school there. And after I finished law school, I came back out here. And I lived in a carriage house right over a block or two from the cathedral for a couple of years. Then moved to Queen Anne and began going to church at St. Paul's.
Oh, nice.
On Queen Anne. I went there for a couple of years. Then I moved again to a houseboat on Lake Union, the first houseboat I was in. And that was in Portage Bay, right over the top of the hill. So I got back to the walk, and so I came back to the cathedral. And it was in about 1987 or so, and I've been here ever since.
Do you remember your first impressions of the cathedral?
A little. I had spent, before I came here to finish college at the University of Washington, I had gone to school in Europe for a year. And I was in big cathedrals, beautiful cathedrals, that everybody knows about during that time. And my first impression was that St. Mark's really didn't measure up architecturally. I did not know the history of the cathedral then, the 30s and the Depression and the mortgage problems and all that. But it was an Episcopal church. It was a cathedral for the diocese. I was an Episcopalian. It was convenient. I knew it somewhat. It doesn't answer your question a whole lot, but it felt like a place to stay. When you're born into the church, you tend to stick with it. At least Episcopalians do.
When did you first start to get connected in terms of volunteering, and how did that come about?
Well, I regarded myself as a newcomer. There was a gentleman here named Jim Brombeck. He was probably 15, 20 years older than I am, and he's dead now. He was the only person charged with coordinating some kind of an approach to newcomers. You come into any church of any denomination, anywhere in the country, and there's always a card to fill out because they're anxious to know that you were here, and they'd like to get to know you better. And those cards would go in the collection plate here, but there was no follow-up. I don't know where they went. Maybe clergy handled them when they could, but there was no organization that took charge of it, save one person, and that was Jim Brombeck. And Jim was a little bit overwhelmed by all the cards, and so I offered to help him because I was a newcomer. And I was appalled. I thought they should be doing more. So I helped him, and the senior warden called me one night and said they were having a meeting of people to nominate people. He was forming a nomination committee to nominate people to the vestry. And would I help out? And I told him that I didn't know anybody. I'd only been here a short time. I had no idea what was required and why would they be asking me? And he said, we want to have a representative of every segment, every organization, every group of people in the cathedral around the table to nominate people. And you've been working with newcomers, and I know you don't know anybody, and you don't know how the place works, and but would you do it? And so I agreed to. It was 5 minutes away from my houseboat. And at that meeting, some of the old-timers, they're all dead now, were very cordial to me, and we had our meeting, and after the meeting, or as the meeting was ending, that was it, some nominations had been thrown out from that for vestry members, and they asked me if I would be willing to stand for election to the vestry. I said no, because I didn't, for the reasons that I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
And I really didn't have my feet on the ground around here, and it wasn't, and I put them off with maybe sometime in the future. And they took it all in stride and said, okay. And then there was another meeting a week later with the senior warden and some members of the vestry, and I think the new dean, Fred North, had just come. And these people were throwing out names for vestry, and they nominated me again. For the reasons that I gave you before, I don't think it would be appropriate. Plus, I've never heard of a nominating committee being able to nominate one of its own members. Remember, I was a member of this committee. Well, apparently they didn't see any problem with it. And they put my name in and it was approved, and then I was elected, and so that's how I got on vestry.
How long had you been coming to St. Mark's by that point?
Probably not more than a year as a member.
That's remarkably quick, I think.
Way too quick.
What was it like for you still getting used to this place, still meeting people for the first time, and then to find yourself in that position of servant leadership?
Well, I believe in the church. I believe we all have a role in it and a part to play. And I thought at the time that this was a kind of a sneaky way on God's part to get me involved. And I thought at the time, well, I'll just let it pass. There are 15 members on the vestry. Mm-hmm. If I just keep my mouth shut and my head down, I shouldn't have any problem getting through this. Plus, it's a 3-year commitment, but, you know, if it's not working well for them, they'll know it soon enough and they can ask me to take my leave. And that's pretty much how it went the first year. At the time, we were laying the foundation for a capital campaign called Century 2. The vestry decided we needed, in addition to the regular senior warden and the regular junior warden, we should have 2 junior wardens, one of which would be charged with the sole responsibility of managing the Century 2 campaign. And logically, that fell to Randy Revell.
Ah, oh, wow.
Randy is now dead in the last year. Randy had been the county executive, mm-hmm. as well as on Seattle City Council. And it was under his watch as the county executive that they built the jail and some other things down there. And he knew a lot about managing a construction project. And so he was the logical one to take the job. He was probably the logical one to be the senior warden. But some of the third-year vestry members thought that I should be the senior warden. So I took it. And the following year, I did it again. So I had two years of being the senior warden.
And this after you felt you were not yet experienced enough to even join the vestry?
It all happened pretty quickly. once you get on vestry, you necessarily find an awful lot about the cathedral.
Yeah.
Are you on vestry now?
I am, yes.
That's what I thought.
And similar to you, there's a lot to learn and discover about St. Mark's not being on the vestry. But once you are there, when you have these conversations, it shines light in so many different ways and in so many different places about how this place works, which for me is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about some of the other volunteering that you've done here.
It was a time of a lot of wild and crazy movements in the cathedral. A number of new staff positions were filled. New clergy came in. I had been always interested in cathedrals, the mission of a cathedral, the true mission of a cathedral, and how it should be constituted to discharge that mission. And I did not think that the cathedral, as constituted at that time, and still is to an extent, reflected or fulfilled the real role of a cathedral. Number one, it appeared to me that we were a large parish church, not a cathedral. Mm-hmm. We rarely spoke for the diocese. We were not regarded as the cathedral church for all of the churches and missions around the diocese. I know that from being out there and talking to them. And that was not necessarily bad, but it did not reflect what I understood to be the Anglican system of cathedrals and parishes and missions. And I saw that it had happened, sort of, that role was lived into over the years as a parish church rather than a cathedral. No one had ever sat down and said, well, okay, we've been named the cathedral. What does that mean other than? So those questions were interesting to me. Mm-hmm. When I finished my term on the vestry, I moved on to another organization called Cathedral Chapter, which does not exist anymore. But it was a small organization made up of diocesan members, the bishop, and certain members of his staff. A couple of people from the cathedral, and then representatives from around the diocese. And that was as close an organization as we had to actually could be said to be a body that could help the cathedral live out its cathedral function for the whole diocese. And they didn't do much. We didn't do much. We met for about an hour once a month, and they always served tea. I remember that. And in years before me, they used to serve sherry. If you didn't want to do anything, that was the place to be. But we didn't do much. They had a few jobs. They did sponsor the Sunday evening Eucharist on television.
Oh, right.
The Christmas.
TV Eucharist.
Yeah. Well, they had a few jobs, but they didn't do much. So, anyway, I tried to, over a period of a few years, we actually intentionally entered into the big job of making this a cathedral. And how would that look?
What do you see as being the work of a cathedral?
Well, that's probably a little out of my pay grade. Well, in our case, I think we reflect what I would think a cathedral ought to be, a meeting place for the community. It's a platform for the bishop. It's the bishop's church. It's the one church in the diocese that he is the head of
on a regular basis.
And it's a good place to hear and discuss and discharge with the bishop, help implement the bishop's vision for the diocese. A cathedral ought to be alive and active and intellectually challenged and challenging to those it engages. Idea, a place to test things out, concepts, ideas, a place of great music. We've always had that. We've done that well, I think. We've had been lucky to have wonderful musicians around here. organist, choir masters, and others, teachers. That was our take on the cathedral structure. I got into a lot of other, a whole bunch of things, Michael, that I did. I was a lay Eucharistic minister, and I helped around the altar, acolyte and all that, reader. I had the Holy Orders Committee for a number of years. We took the Holy Orders Manual that was, we thought, out of date and revised it. There would be a clear path through ordination, at least to the postulancy of it, and then to support the candidate if they went on to seminary and beyond. That was very enjoyable. A priest who was leaving one time asked me, while I was doing that, to consider leading a class in discernment for Holy Orders. And that became, I did it for a whole lot of years. It became a class not so much for people looking for vocation in the church as ordained clergy, but rather we got hold of this notion that everybody is a minister of some kind, and what kind of minister vocationally would you like to be in the church in a lay capacity, you know? And what does it mean to discern, identify, all that? So we had a very good class that I had for probably 8 or 10 years just doing that. Usually I never took more than about 8 people. Many of them went on to become priests. A lot of them didn't. But that was good work. They were good people. It's really not too hard to get things done up here with a little direction. Because the people who pick up the mantle or people who do the work are already energized.
Yeah.
They want to do it. You don't have to beg them. You don't have to twist their arm.
But they need somebody to
walk
them through that.
Yeah. Just point and get out of the way, really.
Which is good leadership, really.
I don't know if it is or not, but it's very gratifying to see people embrace it and get really good at it.
Yeah.
That's a marvelous thing. I never knew about that.
That's a good feeling.
I had a couple of years as the director of the Justice Committee. That was wonderful work. Those ministries have been doing just outstanding work. Mm-hmm. The cathedral's always been known for that, long, long before I ever got involved in it. And they were effective. We were a little too spread out, probably, because a long time ago we used to encourage people, if they had an idea, run with it. And that's good. Mm-hmm. But the place is so big that there might be two such people doing the same thing and not knowing about it, that the other's doing it too. It might look confusing and a mess and all that, and it could be. But it was also very gratifying that people would come and say, you know, what we need around here is a, 10-cent cigar or a nickel cigar, whatever. Mm-hmm. Fine, do it. Do it, make it happen. Grab a couple of people, get you a little money, you know. And I think where we've gotten a lot through the leadership of David Mazenbring when he was here running the Justice Ministry, Pete Strymer, who was here before him, they did wonderful work. The dean has been very hands-on. Dean Thomason has been very hands-on in that regard. very supportive, mm-hmm. and experienced and insightful and effective. We own the green belt out here. The city at one time came to us, as well as our neighbors up and down the green belt, and wanted to buy it. And somehow I got to kind of leave the St. Mark's side of as a seller, potential seller. And that little exercise dragged on for about 3 years back in the 90s. And they'd come and offered us $200,000 or $300,000 for it, for the Greenbelt. Mm-hmm. I think we told them that we wanted, I don't know, $10 million. We were not even close. And we told them that they could have the property for their green belt. And even though we never had any idea, no plan, no hidden card to develop the green belt, we told them that we did. We were going to put condominiums out there. And they thought that would be awful and would defeat the whole purpose of a green belt.
Mm-hmm, which
we all quietly agreed between ourselves, but it was a good bluff.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, we won't give you any more money. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll just by our right of eminent domain, we'll just take the property under a conservation easement.
Oh, right.
And that way you get to hang on to the property and you just can't develop it. And we're not going to give you any more money. It was still about $300,000 I think was on the table. So I got an architect friend of mine involved, and he said, they can do that. They can take the property, but you get back the development rights that you would have had in that property.
Yes.
And you can take it up to the cathedral. And I said, what good does that do us? And he said, I'll show you. He drew a big picture of the cathedral, and then he drew all these little up-down pictures of condos right around the cathedral, like right up to the front door, a little town. It would have been a little town right here. And you couldn't share that too much because people would think that's what you were doing.
Of course.
And then they'd start rumors.
Yeah.
And that's the death of the church. But gossip and all that. I don't know. I think those people think it builds community. It's talked that way. The city was floored. They said, you can't do that to that beautiful cathedral. I said, well, of course we can. We own it. And does the bishop know about this? I don't know if the bishop did or not, but he told me he did.
Of course
he did. He authorized it. It was his idea.
Oh, wow.
And at any rate, the long story short is that we eventually sold it to him for $800,000 or $900,000. Yeah, we bettered their offer by a huge bunch. That doesn't sound like much money today, and it's only been 25 or 30 years. On the other hand, we used to own that big home between the school, Gage, uh-huh. and the diocese, that enormous house.
Yes.
That used to be the deanery.
That used to be the deanery?
Yeah.
Not a bad space?
Not at all. And and they sold it to a private party. Huh. When they did, it was for $80,000 to $100,000, maybe $150,000. You know, it's a $10 million property.
Yeah.
Anyway, values, it's all kind of relative, but yeah. Depending on what time you're in. Other things, I don't know. There have just been a lot of things that I've done.
Why has it been important for you to do these things? Because you became senior warden pretty quickly, and you could have said at the end of that term, you know what, that's my time, I'm good. I don't have to do anything else more. But you did a lot of things on Sunday mornings. You did a lot of things during the week. And my question is, why was it important for you that this place be a place of service for you?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I think a lot of it has to do with my work on vocation within the church from a lay standpoint, that I was called to do that kind of thing or something like it. There was so much to do. There always is. There always will be. I had some luck getting things done, and there was a whole lot more to do. And there were good people to do it with, to work with, work for. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the social contact. But more, I enjoyed the work that was to be done. You know, it's got to be done. The mission of the church and all that. And I believed in that, and I still do. We're blessed up here with a lot of people who are talented. I'm not one of them, necessarily. I do what I can, but that's not important how much talent you got. But we have a lot of people who are that way, and it's amazing. You talk to them, what they know, and not only that, what they can do. Then you add willingness to it, and they are willing. Man, there's nothing you can't do up here.
Hopefully, if we do this right, it's the mark of a healthy community that, there's always going to be things to do, but that we enjoy doing them with the people we have here. And people who are very talented. They know things, they know people, and that's how we get things done. That's how, if we do this right, that's the work of the church, to do God's work together, not just going off in our own separate directions, but as one body, one people, we can... Whatever the need is, and you mentioned the justice programs, that's a huge need. But whatever that need is, we do it as a church, we do it as a community and a family even. And we're blessed that we have people who for years have been doing this work and have been making this happen. Not just for St. Mark's, but for this Capitol Hill community, for the city of Seattle, and all the other people who we've made contact with over those years. Mac, thank you so much. This has really been the first time you and I have talked, but it's been a wonderful story of learning about your service, learning about how, like you said, there's always work to be done, but we can do it with a glad heart. I mean, it's difficult work sometimes. It's tiring, but hopefully, God willing, we never lose sight of the importance of it, of serving God and serving God's people. And if that's the takeaway from this conversation, then I am... very, very grateful to you for sharing your story and your time with us today.
Hope I didn't run along too much. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Our music was performed by Michael Kleinschmidt on the Flintrop organ at St. Mark's. Michael Pereira and Andrew Himes produced the podcast, and we hope you'll visit stmarks.org. So long.